Welcome to the New York Outdoor News Great Northeast Podcast. Every 2 weeks, we explore news and issues affecting hunters, anglers, and conservation across the northeastern United States. If you enjoy the content here, be sure to subscribe to our print or digital versions by calling 800-535-5191 or visit our website at outdoornews.com. Now, here's your host and a man who claims he's immune to buck fever, New York Outdoor News editor Dan Ladd.
This episode of the Great Northeast Podcast is brought to you by the Family Forest Carbon Program, a collaborative initiative created by two nonprofit organizations, the American Forest Foundation and the Nature Conservancy, assisting landowners in improving the health of their land with long-term sustainable forest management practices while providing guaranteed annual income. Learn more at familyforestcarbon.org. Greetings and welcome to the Great Northeast Podcast. I'm your host, Dan Ladd, editor of New York Outdoor News. As always, happy to be along and happy to have you along on what is a very special episode of this podcast. This is episode 100, and with that, we just want to thank everyone who has been part of this 400 episodes over the last 4 years since we launched in August of 2022. And it's been quite a ride. You know, I've got a background in radio from my college years and never thought I'd do much with it once I got out of it. And then all of a sudden this do-it-home podcasting thing came along, and here I am back in radio land again, and something I've always enjoyed. I never made a career out of it, but again, I always enjoyed it, and it's kind of fun to do this podcast every 2 weeks, and I hope you have an equal amount or get an equal amount of enjoyment out of listening to it. We'll cut right to the chase here. It's our nation's 250th birthday this weekend. Very happy about that. I'm old enough to remember the 200th back in 1976, and I'm sure some of you folks are as well. Quite a milestone if you're a patriotic person such as I am. And I just want to hope everyone has a safe and fun 4th of July weekend. And right now, boy, we're dealing with a lot of heat, as you know. So stay out there, stay cool, stay hydrated, and don't overdo it. I actually had an episode the other day where I kind of was out in the sun for a little too long doing some work and had to kind of dial it down and remember that I'm not a youngster anymore. With that, we have our most recurring guest on this podcast, which is Steve Pyatt. He is the retired editor from New York Outdoor News, who I was fortunate to succeed in back in 2020. And Steve doesn't let any grass grow under his feet, nor his wife Paula, who was the associate editor. They're always busy doing something in the outdoors. They hunt, they fish, and of course they keep writing. Both of them are very active writers. So we're going to have Steve on and catch up with him on a whole bunch of things going on in Pennsylvania and a little bit of New York when we come back right after this.
Are you an avid angler searching for the latest fishing news and tips? It's time to check out OutdoorNews.com. Get ready to reel in the freshest updates and expert advice from top anglers. Plus, you'll have access to the most up-to-date fishing reports, lake maps, lake reports, and more. Don't let the big one get away. Join OutdoorNews.com and reel in a world of fishing knowledge and expertise. Join today, OutdoorNews.com. Your passion, your news, your fishing journey.
Welcome back to the Great Northeast Podcast. I'm your host, Dan Ladd, editor of New York Outdoor News, and we've got the guy that I succeeded at Outdoor News. He was at the helm a lot longer than I was and kind of paved the way for this publication with so many of you readers. And the best part about it is he's still with us for the most part. He does a lot with New York, and if you read Pennsylvania Outdoor News, you'll see him in there. We've got Steve Pyatt here to help us celebrate our 100th episode. And as I said earlier, Steve was the very first guest we had on this podcast when we launched 4 years ago. So, Steve, welcome. How you beating the heat, my friend?
I'm struggling like everybody else. It's not my favorite time of year in the heat of the summer, but we've got a pretty good heat wave going on here, and I don't see a break for it to get back. You know, we need some 60 degree nights at least, and it's been 70s, and it's been pretty tough.
It's rough. I'm not a hot weather person. The joke I was telling at one of my music gigs recently was, it's so hot I saw a coyote chasing a deer and they were both walking. And people even, so what's going on? I mean, how's everything with you? I want to talk about, let's start with Pennsylvania, actually. You've mentioned that we know that there's changes to Sunday hunting. We know there's changes to youth hunts and elk. Enlighten us on some of the things, because what a lot of folks don't know is Steve actually lives just across the New York border in Pennsylvania, and him and Paula, his wife, actively hunt both states.
Yeah, I can see New York right from my office window, and you know, we tiptoe along the border. We know it pretty well, and we've actually, over the years, we've called birds from one state into another. but you have to know the line. There's no gray area about it. So, yeah, Pennsylvania's doing well. You know, they finally expanded Sunday hunting virtually, you know, throughout any season. The big news on the Sunday hunting front is next year, spring gobbler is allowing Sunday hunting. So, but the best thing about that is all of a sudden our youth hunt, which has typically been a 1 day deal on a Saturday right before the regular season, will expand to 2 days. That's going to be key, because we've had so many 1 day washouts, including last spring. I had my good friend Jake Hooper from the Adirondacks brought down his two kids, his boy and a girl, and we just got, you know, drenched. We hunkered down in a blind, and the kids stuck it out, you know, right till about 11 o'clock. But it was a washout, and hopefully, you know, they'll go back next year, and we'll have 2 days to hunt, so that doubles our chances of, you know, having some decent weather.
When typically is that season? Is it the same weekend as New York's, or is it a different weekend?
Yeah, typically it overlaps. I can't recall a year when it didn't. We've had some years where we've been fortunate enough to take a bird in Pennsylvania, you know, would be in the 1 day hunt. We wanted to get it done there, and then we've run up to New York on the same morning, or hunt the kid on Sunday in New York too. So it's going to be nice to have that 2 day option in both states.
What do you hear from hunters when you talk to hunters in Pennsylvania? I mean, what's the consensus you're getting on, especially the Sunday hunting? I mean, because the stuff we read, we see interviews in Pennsylvania Outdoor News about one congressman feels this way, or a senator or assemblyman, one, you know, a politician. One feels one way, one feels another. I mean, what are the hunters saying?
Well, you know, Sunday hunting has been widely accepted among the Pennsylvania hunting fraternity. The big battle down here is the change several years ago. The Game Commission altered the firearms deer opener from its traditional Monday after Thanksgiving to the Saturday after Thanksgiving. It's caused, it's a legitimate split among the sportsmen. Many would like to see it go back to Monday. You know, they think they get, you know, their argument is they get squeezed on the Thanksgiving holiday. They have to run right up to their deer camps to get ready for the Saturday opener. And there's some truth to that. That said, there's fewer deer camps these days. That tradition is winding down, I think. But, you know, so there's some businesses, too, that claim that they miss that opening weekend rush of business. You know, people stocking up on groceries, beer for their camps.
Not beer.
here and there, I guess. So, you know, that remains probably the most divisive issue among deer hunters. The crossbow issue is always going to be a hot one. You know, crossbows are allowed throughout the archery season, and the harvest statistics in Pennsylvania actually showed this year that the crossbow take actually topped, I believe, the firearms take on bucks.
No kidding.
Yeah. So, and you know, so people are getting the early start, and you know, you're hunting in warmer weather, and you know, keep in mind, crossbow use is available to everybody. You know, the people that are complaining about the rifle community taking a back seat, you know, are certainly welcome to join the crossbow legion.
When going back to the Monday opener moving to Saturday, I mean, you were at the helm here at New York Outdoor News when that happened in this state, in New York. And I recall that very well. And I, you know, what were your thoughts at that time, and did they change over the time? Because I want to weigh in on that myself after I hear what you have to say.
Yeah, I don't recall it being the firestorm that it is in Pennsylvania, and probably that's because it doesn't butt up against the Thanksgiving holiday. Yes, you know, tradition is tradition, and there are a lot of hunters that don't like any kind of change. So, I didn't see a major outpouring of opposition among the New York hunting fraternity at the time. I think DC wanted to potentially get more hunters afield, more young hunters afield that might not be able to go on that Monday. I don't, you know if that has happened. But, you know, in New York, I don't think it generated the kind of opposition that it did in Pennsylvania, largely because of that earlier opener, a week ahead of Pennsylvania, you know, didn't really butt up against the Thanksgiving holiday like it does in Pennsylvania.
I was all for it at the time, you know, being a working person who, if I wanted to hunt opening day of Southern Zone in New York, I had to take the day off. And gradually over time, I've gotten away from hunting in the Southern Zone because that's that weekend, especially when it's been earlier, like it was this past year and even the year before, you know, when it happens around the 15th or 16th of November, as opposed to the 20th or 21st or something like that. Seems like we're right in the heart of the rut in the Northern Zone. And then opening day of Southern Zone comes and we lose half our guys when we really are saying, geez, guys, you know, we're knocking on the door right here, some good bucks in the North Country, but everybody wants to go south. Now, I know we're going to talk about some New York stuff later, but now with the earn a second buck thing, it might be advantageous to get out there opening day of Southern Zone and fill an antlerless tag. But PA, I mean, I've seen some of the articles coming out of Pennsylvania Outdoor News, and that's why I'm asking, because it seems like there was a little bit of both sides. So it's interesting to hear you say that. And this Thanksgiving holiday definitely makes a lot of sense because, as you say, you know, it's a holiday weekend. You got kids home from college, things like that. Kids are out of school. You want to spend time with them, and people are going to be chasing down, you know, getting prepared to go to camp a couple of days early. What about you? How does that affect you?
Well, yeah, there's always those kinds of decisions you have to make. You know, for us down here on the border, we make all sorts of decisions. And one of them is the Southern Zone Firearms Deer Opener almost always conflicts with the Pennsylvania Bear Opener. And I would love to kill a Pennsylvania bear. I never have. I've had one opportunity and I blew it. You know, and the bear hunt's a little bit unique. You know, you're out there and you're going to see deer anyway. It's that time of year when they're on the move. So we always have to grapple with that. And last year, actually, Paul and I hunted the PA Bear Opener instead of the New York Deer Opener. 2 years ago, we hunted the Southern Zone deer, and Paula killed a nice buck right up the road here, about 20 miles. But so that's, you know, those are kind of decisions hunters have to make, especially down here along the border every year.
Bear season. I mean, that's we've got a growing bear population across New York and across New England, especially the southern part of New England, Connecticut and the Hudson Valley of New York and even in New Jersey. And, you know, when I speak with deer biologists or I should say big game biologists, one of the things that we foresee is a problem in that, not just New York, but the areas I just mentioned, because bear hunters just aren't taking the bears down there. And, you know, who wants to shoot a bear that's raiding garbage cans all the time? Who wants to eat that bear, you know? Sooner or later, I think we're going to have some sort of a emergency type of request regulation regarding bears that we're seeing right now with deer here in New York. Hey, we got to take a quick break. We're going to come right back with more with Steve Pyatt on our 100th episode of the Great Northeast Podcast right after this.
There's a great program available for youth who love to hunt and fish. It's called the Outdoor News Junior Pro Team, and any youth 18 or under can join for free at jrproteam.com. JPT program showcases useful videos and tips to help encourage the next generation to become stronger anglers and hunters. It's a platform to celebrate and inspire those outdoor loving youth. Check out the photos of Outdoor News Junior Pro Team members on Instagram, Facebook, TikTok, and YouTube, and visit our jrproteam.com for more information.
Welcome back to the Great Northeast Podcast. I'm your host, Dan Ladd, editor of New York Outdoor News, and you're listening to the 100th episode of this podcast. And boy, time flies, and the very first guest we had on was Steve Pyatt, retired editor of New York Outdoor News, and still very active in the writing community, winning all kinds of awards, And of course, he's out there in the field with his wife, Paula, quite a bit in both New York and Pennsylvania and beyond. But Steve, we were talking about bears. Let's talk about bears in PA. You said you want to kill one down there.
Oh, I'd love to, you know, and they are prolific. People generally think, oh, you know, the bears have a cub. Well, in Pennsylvania, one is as common as five cubs, two is as common as four, and the average is somewhat short of three, like 2.7, 2.8. So they're prolific and they're around. I picked up a couple on my trail cam last week. It was a, there were two of them, and I'm sure it was a breeding pair. A boar found a sow. Go figure. This is a breeding season. It's 100 degrees, and they're running around chasing girls with a fur coat on. But they're around, and you know we see them a lot. But the general consensus among hunters is once they kill one, they don't want to deal with another. And wow. I often think too that people underestimate the a black bear as great table fare. The key is to remove all the fat. When you think about it, on many bears, they render the fat down for boot grease. So that might tell you that you don't want to put it on your plate. But if you can get it all, if you get all the fat off, remove the fat off it, the black bear is great eating. I'll put it right up there with venison any day of the week. A lot of hunters disagree, and some, you know, will agree with me.
Well, you know, there's an old saying, and I don't know if this is true or not, but they say Daniel Boone hunted deer for the hides and bear for the meat. I've heard that said. We've always heard that getting the carcass cooled down real quick is important with a bear as well. Even though I hunt the Adirondacks, I'm kind of hunting around the Lake George region, and on one side of the lake, we very seldom see any bear sign, and the other, it comes and goes. We've killed one bear in the last 15 years, and we got it right to the butcher, and the guy that shot it, he said, you know, he no sooner got it out of the truck than they had the hide off of it and had it in the cooler. And it was, like you said, it was great. We were eating venison, or I should say black bear pot roast. I enjoyed it thoroughly, and a good bear stew is a treat. And hey, you know, you got to try it is I guess what I say, especially the mountain bears up here in the Adirondacks that are, you know, living off whatever they're eating, whether it's, they love beech nuts when we have them, which is a lot fewer and farther in between now, whether it's acorns or berries, black cherry, you know, whatever it is they're eating natural foods. And, I mean, it's just pure organic meat from my standpoint. What's involved with taking a bear down there? I mean, are you in farm country? Are you hunting the mountains?
A little bit of both. You know, they kill a lot of bears. I mean, they wreak havoc in the cornfields down here along the river. And they'll just sit on their butt and rake stalks in. And if you took a drone over some of these cornfields, you'd swear a flying saucer landed in them. So there's a lot of groups will drive the fields, the cornfields, and get after the bears. My buddy and I and Paula, we actually tend to hunt around swamps. The smaller swamps are, you know, more manageable for us. You know, you get a big swamp and you just, you know, they're everywhere. You just can't deal with them. But, you know, we've had them around. We set trail cams in the summer even. And, you know, we get bears on trail cam. And typically, if we don't get an opportunity, somebody around us has, you know, does. You know, so it's a lot of fun. It's pretty exciting. I've actually taken one bear, but that was up in the state of Maine. Wasn't a large bear. It was just over 100 pounds. You know, not every bear is 500 pounds, despite what some people think, the average non-hunter, I guess. But at that time, we got it taken care of right away. And up there, there's so many butchers that actually are used to handling bears. They did a great job on it.
Yeah, bear, you know, for the longest time, I said, I'm not going to shoot a bear. As you know, we make drives in the Adirondacks. But ever since we got that one and the guys liked it, our attitudes kind of changed. And we say now, okay, it depends on where we are and how big the bear is.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
If we're pretty far back in, somebody, we have people that'll pull the trigger, myself. I don't know. When the opportunity presents itself, we'll see. I mean, I've seen bears. I once had a sow with three cubs run by me, and I never brought the gun to the shoulder. Another time I just caught a flash of one. again, it's there. It's very rare for us to see a bear, but it's exciting when we do. How about the elk situation down there? I mean, that's really interesting. And whenever you write about it for us, you know, when you do the annual big game out of state preview, I mean, it's always really refreshing to hear that they actually hunt elk in Pennsylvania.
Yeah, it's such a unique species for Pennsylvania, and it's they're expanding their range a little bit. You know, they've drifted over into a couple other drainages. It's prompted the Game Commission to alter the hunting zones a little bit this year. I would encourage, whether you're a hunter or a non-hunter, I would encourage everyone to go down to the Benezet area, visit the Pennsylvania Elk Country Visitor Center, and just tool around the region, and you will see elk. You know, especially in early September is a great time when they're out there at their bugling best, and it's really quite a treat. This year, it looks like, if I recall, it's about 144 tags are available, combination of bulls and cows, and also either sex tags. There's several season. There's an archery, a couple different regular season, and then a late season. The elk tag draw is it's held. It's the highlight of the annual Elk Expo out at the Benezet at the Visitor Center. That's in late July, July 25th, I believe. Paul and I and a couple friends, we go out to pull our camper out there and anxiously await our name being called. It hasn't happened yet for me. My buddy did get drawn for a bull tag a few years ago, and he took an 8x7 elk, which wow. Gives you an idea what is available. It's an exciting time, and like I said, whether you're a hunter or non-hunter, I would encourage you to visit that Benezet area in elk country and see what it's all about.
If you were Paula were to draw a tag, what firearm would you use to hunt?
You know, I wouldn't waver from my old 270. I've taken mm-hmm. a Newfoundland moose with it. You know, when I hunted mountain goats, I took the 270 one time in British Columbia. My guide was focused on either a 300 wind mag or a 30-06. When I went to Alaska and took a 300 wind mag. Paula, if she would draw, she would take an 06, no doubt about it.
Okay, and how big a round are you shooting out of them?
I would go 150. You know, that's pretty much my limit on the 270. Paula would take probably just a 180. She'd be fine with it.
Yeah, no kidding.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep. It's about bullet placement, that's for sure.
Sure. When I hunted moose in Newfoundland, I beefed up to 220 in my 30-06.
Yeah, nothing wrong with that. Yep.
And still cut one down at 167 yards, which was pretty cool.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
But like you said, it's all about bullet placement. We talk about that all the time now. And in fact, our mutual friend and writing buddy, Mike Rakovitz, has got an article coming up on just that topic from a hand loading standpoint. He's got some pretty light loads that he's firing off, and he just likes what he's shooting. And we'll save that for the article.
Yeah, Mike's a great guy. He's just up the road. We get together pretty regularly. I traded texts with him yesterday, as a matter of fact.
Yeah, I enjoy his content. You know, he's giving me some good reloading pointers because I'm fairly new to reloading here, and I'm out going on my fourth year, and I really like it. Reloading's addicting, and I won't even get started talking about it because we'll be a couple hours with that. But we're going to catch another break right here, and we're going to come back with more from Steve Pyatt on the 100th episode of the Great Northeast Podcast, right after this.
Your land is your legacy, but keeping it healthy and thriving means caring for it now and in the future. The Family Forest Carbon Program can help you do right by your land with guaranteed income, help developing a forest management plan, and advice from experts. If you own 30 acres or more of forest land in Vermont, Massachusetts, or New York, you may be eligible to enroll in the Family Forest Carbon Program. Visit familyforestcarbon.org and enroll today.
Welcome back to the Great Northeast Podcast. I'm your host, Dan Ladd, editor of New York Outdoor News. We're on our 100th episode of this podcast, and we thank everybody who's made that possible and for dropping in and chiming in. And Steve Pyatt is with us. He's the retired editor of New York Outdoor News and also has the record for the most appearances on this podcast. He was our first guest, and
25 and 50 and 75, whatever. You've been in there quite a bit. And here we are at 100. So, Steve, we've been talking about Pennsylvania. And, of course, you're right on the border. You said you can see New York out your window. How's that conflict work with you between the two states? And mainly, I want to draw that into the conversation about DEC's new antlerless deer hunting regs that's going to take place in New York now.
Yeah, it's kind of ironic that New York, Pennsylvania over the years has been the battleground state on when it comes to deer management. You know, they went to antler restrictions years ago, and then certainly the change from the Monday deer opener to the Saturday, and all sorts of things like that. It's kind of ironic that these days is that New York is the hotbed. I looked at the deer regulations, and our units down here are not part of the no quota DMPs. That's up primarily the Lake Plains region and a couple other units. I absolutely understand DEC's desire to trim the antlerless deer population in those units. I've hunted up there, and I've actually had a little bit of success. I killed a buck up there outside of Rochester in the town of Mendon. I was thankful I didn't kill several deer on the road to and from my deer stand every day. I was running a slalom through them. I don't know how successful New York will be with this effort, because access still remains a huge issue. And then you're asking hunters too to change some of their hunting philosophies. There's a lot of legitimate reasons to pass on an antlerless deer. It might be too warm. They might not have the facilities to take care of a doe. There's always a potential, particularly as a rut kicks in, that a buck may be trailing a doe. Early in the season, you have a great chance of killing a buck on a food source, so you might not want to take a doe then. All those issues are going to come into play, and it remains to be seen how successful DEC will be in their effort to trim the herd. As far as the earn a second buck regulation, I'll preface this by personally saying I've never been in favor of a two buck rule in New York. I've had the opportunity to take a second buck in New York State over the years, and my philosophy, I've stuck to that philosophy that I would not do that. But it's going to be interesting to see how DEC enforces that earn a buck regulation, the earn a second buck rule. It's going to require a little more effort in the field, I think, to confirm the harvest, things like that. So that again remains to be seen, whether this is going to work. But like I said, I absolutely understand DEC's effort in those units to want to trim the herd.
Yeah, I mean, this is, once again, we're entering a new era. It seems like every 2 or 3 years or 4 years, we get a new regulation, we enter a new era. Obviously, a few years ago, it was the change in the hunting hours and the having to wear fluorescent orange, which we're all okay with, at least I am. We are sitting here in the Adirondacks just hoping that people don't start shooting antlerless deer in places that they didn't in the past. Because as you know, you've hunted up here, and it's one of these situations, as you said, and as I've said, where we've got to manage ourselves. We have to manage ourselves. And I hope that the desire for the second buck tag doesn't overrule thoughts on, doing what's right for the deer herd in a particular area.
Right.
And when you speak with DEC, they're hoping that, someone like me will go somewhere where I can harvest an antlerless deer and do that to get the second buck. I don't really mind the second buck myself. I've always been a northern zone bow hunter and muzzle loading hunter, but I can tell you, I can count on one hand how many times I've done it. And that's my point is, I don't think you're just going to see all these people suddenly slaughtering a second deer, because it's hard to do up here in the northern zone, especially in the Adirondacks.
Sure.
I mean, I've had years where, a couple of years ago, I shot a decent buck on opening day, and I don't think I saw another buck the rest of the season. I think I caught an antler. And then a few years back, I shot one right around Halloween, and I saw two more bucks that year. One of them I definitely could have shot, and the other one was pretty far away. But again, it doesn't happen a lot, and I don't see it happening a lot to guys in our party. And that might happen one year, and then you might go 2 years without even seeing an antler in the northern zone. I mean, it's just a crapshoot. You just don't know when you hunt in the manner that we hunt, making drives. You know, when it's your day, it's your day. But how they enforce it, that will be interesting, and I do hope they try to do something along those lines. And as you know, the agency is so short-staffed. I mean, they only have so many resources. They can't do checkpoints and things like that. Even though it's not a one size fits all, but again, I think it's a new era. But my question to you is, how's that going to affect? Is it going to change the way, you know, you approach how you, whether you hunt Pennsylvania or New York, or, you know, is it going to make any difference to you or any of the other people you talk to down there?
Not at all. Like I said, not at all. Like I said, we're not part of the units involved in the no quota DMPs. And, you know, I don't plan on trying to earn a second buck tag. If I did, let's put it this way. If today was mid-October, which I wish it was, as I sit here sweating, I could drive around. I guarantee I could find a roadkill doe and pick it up and claim I harvested it. And okay, where's my second buck tag? There's sure. Absolutely no doubt about it. And that has happened in other states. I know Wisconsin dealt with, some challenges as far as, enforcing their earn a buck, regulation.
Yeah. The roadkill harvest. So what's on tap for you? What's coming up? Any big fishing trips this summer, and then leading into fall? I know you're planning to come up here and hunt the Adirondacks.
Yeah, I'm guessing my good friend Terry Catlin, and he would be a good friend even if he didn't have a boat. I can honestly say that. He'll invite me out to Lake Erie for a walleye meat hunt, and we'll do well. When you go out to Lake Erie, the trick is will the lake allow you to get on. If it's not kicking up and you can get out there, you're going to catch your limit. It's that good. So we usually do an overnight and fish 2 days and get two limits each and have walleye in our freezer. We might do another salmon trip too. Hope to do that. I'm a half mile, right? I can walk down over the hill here and be on the Susquehanna River in 10 minutes. And when it cools off a little bit, I'll be fishing for smallmouth. Actually, I'm looking forward this year to a return to the Adirondacks. Myself and a couple other buddies are going to head up the second weekend of early bear. We're going to carry rifles, but it's going to be more so a scouting trip in preparation for the deer opener in October. We're going to return probably to Moose River Plains area, not way up north to where we lived for 16 years in the Elizabethtown area. But we're going to go into the Moose River Plains. My one friend is quite familiar with the area over the years, and we're going to give it a go for a few days and really have a great time. We've rented a cottage up in the inlet area, and it's just going to be a blast. It'll be our hunting camp experience for the year.
So you're going to be in Jim Massett's old territory there in the western end of the plains. Yeah, he had a camp in inlet for years. And now, about when? What time of the year are you coming up here?
We're going to go for the opening weekend for about 4 days.
Okay.
Rifle opener. It's going to be a blast. I'm really looking forward to it. You never know what you're going to get. We might get 75 degrees. We might get 6 inches of snow. You just never know. But we'll be prepared for anything and just take what comes and have a great time.
Well, speaking from experience, the last few years has been pretty good right around the opener, right around Halloween. You know, it's been a pretty good time of year to be hunting. And where you are, some of the leaf cover might be a little bit ahead of, say, where I am in the eastern Adirondacks.
Right.
You know, you might have a few more leaves off up there that time of year than we have here.
Yep.
We're going to be going up to Cranberry Lake that same week. We're not going for the weekend, but we're going to go up midweek and do a hunt up in that area because my brother has a camp in that area, that part of the northern Adirondacks. In fact, that's where I shot my biggest buck. My biggest Adirondack buck came from that region, a 205-pound nine-pointer.
Yeah.
And it's swamp country. And, Moose River Plains, similar country. I mean, you got a lot of wetland up in there to to chase them around. And are you guys going to track, stock, sit,
make drives? I'll do some still hunting. If there's tracking available, I will give it a shot. You know, I joked, in fact, with Jim Massett and, Joe DiNitto, and I joked, that I've actually taken one buck on the track, and, it was a legitimate 91 pounds. It was a 5-point weighed at the wooden nickel in the town of Lewis, and it was 91 pounds. So that was the highlight of my tracking experience. But we're going to do that. I would take a bear up there, make no mistake. And I would love to see a moose. That would be huge. Great experience too. So
if you're anywhere around Hell Diver Pond, you got a good chance of seeing a moose. My famous moose photos came from the Cedar River Flow on the east end over towards Indian Lake.
Yep.
About 10 years ago, I encountered a big bull moose on that pond.
Yeah, I remember that. That was awesome.
You know, I sent some of the photos to Region 5 and now when DEC uses my photos, they give Gary Lee the credit. I photographed one moose in my life in New York. Gary's photographed hundreds.
Yeah, well, for all the moose experiences we've had over the years, calling them in Maine and Newfoundland and northern Minnesota into Quebec or into Ontario, I have never seen a New York moose, even though when we lived in the Adirondacks, we actually had moose on our road a couple times, and I wasn't able to catch a glimpse of them.
Same here. We've had them right. I've actually found moose droppings on my own property, but never saw the moose that did it. But that I got lucky that day. And Adrian, my wife, is just aching to see a moose. She just wants to see one in the worst way. And we've got a couple camping trips planned up north, and we'll be in moose country. You just never know. It's just like, it's one of those things. You come around the bend in the road, and there it is.
It's a big needle, but a big haystack too.
Sure. Steve, anything else we want to catch up on before we sign off here?
No, I just appreciate the opportunity. Keep chugging along. You're doing a great job taking it to new heights. I'm enjoying retirement, doing enough writing that it's keeping me very busy. Paula, too, I've always said she's the better writer of the two of us. And she's got some magazine work with Just Labs magazine, Retriever Journal, Pointing Dog Journal. And so she's keeping busy too. And right now we're just trying to stay in the air conditioning for a few more days.
Yeah. And we've got an article coming up in New York Outdoor News that she penned on mixed breeds. So, well, thanks for coming on. Thanks for your support. You've been listening to the 100th episode of the Great Northeast Podcast. Here's hoping everybody's got a big fish in their net and a big buck on their meat pole. For New York Outdoor News and the Great Northeast Podcast with Steve Pyatt, I'm Dan Ladd.
Missed a past episode of the New York Outdoor News Great Northeast Podcast? You can find previous programs at outdoornews.com or via your favorite podcast streaming platform. And for the rest of the story on the topics we cover on this program, get yourself a subscription to Outdoor News. Simply call 800-535-5191 or visit us at outdoornews.com. And don't forget to join us again here in 2 weeks to talk everything out of doors. Thanks for listening to the New York Outdoor News Great Northeast Podcast.